Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast, episode 134. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know, burning the candle, but it's about all you can do, right?
We are, and it 24/7, my friend. The thunder will roll.
The thunder will roll. Well, just before we dive into this one, as always, our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in on any platform that you are, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, FM, well, anywhere. So we definitely have a reach, and it's been pretty cool. So I wanted to throw that out there. Just to remind everyone that this is a reason we keep coming back to these airwaves here. So, anyway, get some of my tea down here.
With that. It is good to, obviously we're not numbers whores. It's we started this small ball and we're playing the long game, but at the same time it is nice from the perspective of we've gotten enough reach that, you know, it's a numbers game, just like sales is, for instance. Yeah, how many people are going to actually give you feedback? So it's been nice to get enough feedback from different sectors of, initially it was the country and now the globe.
Yeah.
That it kind of reinforces what we're doing. And also the constructive criticism is good because we've been able to refine and hone our craft.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, it still seems like, as much as we kind of hone the podcasts, it still is a practice. I don't know. It's you have good ones. You have, I don't know, we've had bad ones, but you know, I mean, bar technical difficulties, that still gets done. But it's just like, oh, glad
yeah,
that's done.
That's the only thing that's been a real blight on any of them. You know, because we would know from feedback if there have been any legit bad ones. But yeah, some of the technical issues have made some more frustrating than others, but it's part of what in seeing us get on Spotify in April and iHeartRadio in May has kept us really going. All right, we're on the cusp, and it's going to make it that much more worthwhile when we're face to face every time.
Yep.
In the office. So
I was just thinking of like the worst technical difficulties were probably the ones that I could have avoided completely. And because, you know, you can't really, Skype is Skype, the internet's the internet. I don't have any internet boosters here, and I don't know that it would really do anything if there's technical difficulties on one side or the other. But I can think of some of the episodes where we had really good episodes and, you know, 45-minute long, hour-long podcast episodes, just like kind of mentally draining, because believe it or not, like, not a sob story here, but sometimes the things we go into, you get done with these podcast episodes and you're just like, I'm exhausted.
Like an exam.
Yeah, it's mentally exhausting. And then those are the podcasts invariably that I didn't hit. Well, you hit record, but for whatever reason your audio is not recording, or I didn't look at it in the middle of the podcast, and you get that weird gut feeling like something's not right here, and you're 45 minutes into an episode and your audio didn't come through or something like that.
I forgot about that. I was at the VA the next one day when you told me that. I was like, oh, well, you know.
I mean, you always took it in stride. It was like, well, we just do another one. We're going to do one anyway, but it's just like, can't. There's some things that you can't recapture. That's banter back and forth, and you can't, it's hard to recreate that in some sort of theatrical type setting to make it genuine.
Well, that's part of where it helps that my being crazy, so it's like, well, I can recreate this at some juncture. And so it has been, and you mentioned that, I think this isn't really a technical difficulty as far as a mistake we made, but do you remember, I even joked about it being our 13-day crisis, the 13 days of back and forth with Apple over getting on iTunes?
Yeah.
My God.
Well, even just the inception of the podcast itself, it was like the recording platforms we had. And I mean, today I literally just turn the mixer on, hook up and you just go in 30 seconds or less. And back then it was like you did it one way and then you opened it again and you couldn't do it that way. And then the hosting site was an issue, and then getting on iTunes, it was just like, ugh.
RSS feed wasn't compatible with that.
Man,
like,
I never lost faith, but I do remember thinking to myself, oh my God, is this the way it's going to be for every, like, this is just going to be laborious, but here we are today.
Yeah, initially it was okay, like, I'm going to have to start drinking again if this is the way it's going to be, but fortunately.
Yeah, well, we're 134 episodes in, and we seem to have streamlined a lot of those issues for the most part. Mm-hmm. But
strategy.
Anyway, with that, we wanted to, the one thing, two things we wanted to address, and I'll leave the major one for last. We just want to kind of close the loop on immigration and this child separation, because we did get some feedback from individuals, and I'll read a little bit of the, it's not an article per se, it's a, from the DHS.gov website, and it's a myth first fact on the tolerance policy, zero tolerance policy. So we'll kind of talk about, spend a couple of minutes on immigration one more time. I'm sure there's some people out there going, oh my God, enough, but it just keeps coming up.
Well, we have to close this loop because, you know, like the Big Lebowski, new stuff has come to light.
Yeah.
Right, and there's, and we'll get to this, but the final bullet mark is I'm trying to be nice here, the poor performance of the mainstream media. When I told you precast, I didn't think I could be disappointed in the mainstream media. Well, they proved me wrong. Hold my beer.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the second thing we want to touch on, which is a little more interesting, but this is the Canadian legalization of recreational marijuana. And we've talked about pot a couple times on this episode. Probably not going to hear a whole lot of new things in regards to our philosophy and ideology surrounding pot and cannabis, but it'd be interesting. We'll go ahead and kind of break down the new Canadian system that will go live. I think it's October 17th or something like that. But with that,
I wonder what makes it interesting, being both being veterans, you of the Army and of the Navy, regardless, it's still interesting having a serious conversation about the potential national legalization here, which it's at some point it feels like an inevitability, but as states, as state by state, it happens, and you see the hypocrisy on different channels, but especially I love the states' rights folks who are like, well, we're just talking about guns and marijuana is where states' rights are. You know, other than that, then the federal government.
Yeah, it's
give me a break.
Yeah, it's a weird topic when it comes to states' rights and the federal government.
Be consistent, and if you must lie better.
Lie better, be better. Well, anyway, let's
don't
dive.
Don't suck at life.
Yeah, let's dive into immigration here. So, if you listen to two podcasts ago, I put a disclaimer just sort of an update at the beginning of the podcast that said we are aware that Donald Trump signed an executive order to stop family separation as we know moving forward. We don't really know about the existing children that are separated.
It's entitled Affording Congress an Opportunity to Address Family Separation, 20 June 2018. Yeah. And that really is, we'll get to it, but that's really where we're at this point is, unfortunately, as much as Congress and action don't go together very often, they're going to have to make it happen or else it's not going to happen.
It's not. Yeah, exactly. So what we know now, so I'll go ahead and just give the credit due to, I don't know if he listened to the podcast, but he definitely left a comment on my Facebook page when I posted the episode to that. I'll post it in the show notes, but it's
your solo episode.
No, it was the, well, I don't know if it was a solo episode.
It was the one you and I did together. No, that one was definitely different. It had,
this was actually my solo podcast.
Okay.
Anyway, I figured I'd go ahead and just
at least
allow DHS a moment here on this podcast.
And know, folks, that this could be you next episode. Give us the feedback. We'll gladly, if you opine, we'll read about it.
I'll even, this is a an old Army guy that I had in the unit that, and if you want your name, of course, blasted, I'll definitely do that for you. But
we'll put your first name and your last initial, you know, the state or nation you hail from. But seriously, keep up with the criticism and we will, you to ride, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. So we'll go through here. This article or not an article. I don't even know spots. What to call it. Yeah. It's called Myth vs. Fact, DHS Zero Tolerance. And they have this fairly pointed statement at the beginning that says, in recent days, we have seen reporters, members of Congress, and other groups mislead the public on Department of Homeland Security's zero tolerance policy. So the first myth is DHS has a policy to separate families at the border. They say, fact, DHS does not have a blanket policy of separating families at the border. However, DHS does have a responsibility to protect all minors in our custody. This means DHS will separate adults and minors under certain circumstances. These circumstances are, one, when DHS is unable to determine the familial relationship, two, when DHS determines that a child may be at risk with the parent or legal guardian, or three, when the parent or legal guardian is referred for criminal prosecution. So the big one there, I think, that people have the most uproar about is this referred for criminal prosecution. And if you look back on this, there was a sort of zero tolerance policy on those people through the Trump, you know, top down from the Trump administration to prosecute those who are moving across the border. So collateral damage is going to be anyone that has brought a child across the border. And of course, there's some other things here. They define familial relationship, also human trafficking and smuggling. If there's a reason to suspect that, they'll be separated, safety risk, and then criminal, as we said before, criminal prosecution. Let's see. The other myth here is prior to April 2017, DHS never separated families arriving at the border. So their fact is DHS has separated families under circumstances described above. Because of court decision, DHS can generally no longer hold families in detention beyond 20 days. So, and then the other myth as well, they say indefinitely detain families. And I think everyone can sort of agree that I don't think anyone's really being indefinitely detained. The one myth here that they sort of debunk, and I'll read this in its entirety, because again, maybe this is a bias that I had that they're referring everyone for prosecution. But the myth is DHS is referring for prosecution all families coming to the border. So the fact is DHS...
That's again, real quick.
Yeah.
Referral for prosecution, folks, or criminal prosecution, because that seems to be the word that's bothering people. First of all, righteous indignation aside, they are breaking the law.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have to concede that.
That's like, there's a law in the state of Ohio where you're not supposed to eat garlic within an hour of going to a movie theater. That's a fact. Okay. Is it really enforced? The spirit of the law is no. Okay. But the point is, it is a violation of law. Second, the real gist of this that I want to get out and then resume by all means, but is that that's like being indicted, for instance. Just because you're indicted, that simply means it's going to be investigated. And if something really is discovered when you appear before the grand jury, yes, you may be prosecuted. But that's basically what this amounts to here. Yeah. Is a glorified indictment.
Yeah, exactly. So their fact here is that in referring to prosecution, DHS only refers to the DOJ those adults who violate the law by crossing the border illegally or who have violated some other criminal law and are amenable for prosecution. When adults with or without children unlawfully enter this country, there must be a consequence for breaking our laws. DHS is not referring for prosecution families or individuals arriving at ports of entry or attempting to enter the country through legal means. These families and individuals have not broken the law and will be processed accordingly. So, again, I think people reading this can put on tinfoil hats, etc., and say this is not the case. I can't point to a case where people, because their next myth is they're turning away asylum seekers at the port of entry. And they said, we're absolutely not. We're complying with federal law with regard to processing individuals claiming asylum at ports of entry. Maybe there are cases, one-off cases, and I'm sure people could point to those where individuals are turned away for asylum. In my mind, I'm jogging my memory, I think there are, but I don't think that they're being denied or turned around once they get to the proper location. I think there's been some cases where people have been turned around at bridges. They haven't been able to approach. And those are one-off. I don't think that's the policy of DHS or immigration.
It's like I know this is a massive example, but like the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, okay? Was it a good look for the Army? Absolutely not. It was morally reprehensible. but it was used, and unfairly so, to castigate the entire process. And all of a sudden, yes, all soldiers and Marines were baby killers.
Yeah.
You know, this is, there's always going to be one-off things that happen, okay? And we're talking about a massive amount of people here.
Yeah, it's...
We've got a large sample size that is being heavily scrutinized.
Yeah, so you absolutely will be able to find situations where wrong or abuse was created. And if DHS is following all of this to a T, and I guess maybe I'll go out in, on a limb and say I don't have any reason to believe that they're not, that they're sort of just following the policy that's put into place. And this is why, for me, kind of with this centrist type viewpoint, that it's important for me to, when I see things that create a visceral reaction to me, that I have to take it with a grain of salt. I have to check my emotional EQ, or IQ rather, and dig a little deeper as to what is actually happening here, because this could continue to go on, and if there wasn't something that was leaked, we would never know about it, and that maybe is scary in some cases. But in this case, I don't know what. I guess the question would be, what's the solution here? There will be individuals who, like I said, are crossing the border illegally and are referred for prosecution. And in that case, if they have a kid, they are going to be detained. Now, is the detention centers the ideal place for a kid? Probably not. But
the chain link fence is a bad look, regardless. Yeah. Okay. But just as the modern media acts like the American South invented slavery, so they act like the Trump administration has invented the chain link fence just to embarrass immigrant children.
Yeah.
Not as accurate.
Yeah, and I think maybe the way moving forward here that we learn, something we learn from this, is that we need to create environments that are probably less traumatic for kids that are being detained. But I don't.
Sure.
We can do that.
We'll stipulate that. That's true. Okay. But at the same time, as we discussed precast, there's enough legitimate issues to focus on here and across the board, as to pertains to not only the border but the president, our government as a whole, without using old photographs from a previous administration, without showing videos that show a kid crying. Well, of course he's crying.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that more later. But then afterwards, when the child is reunited with his parent, oh, guess what? The media didn't show you that portion of the video.
Yeah. You know, again, my stance on the podcast I did alone and the one I would did with John, like, I still stand by all of that. I hate to see this happen to people. But, you know, there are kind of disingenuous things. Like you said, that the photo of the child crying, I think she was in a pink or purple type like sweatshirt, and the photographer talks about having a really hard time taking that photograph. And like, yeah, I mean, it's terrible, and it really touches you in a visceral way. But I would hope that the whole story was painted, the clear picture was painted. And if, you know, I look at this and I say, yeah, I mean, this is tragic. If you're moving across the border, it's tragic that you have to do that in the first place. You have to do it with a kid. And then it's the middle of the night, and it's past a kid's bedtime.
A stranger is grabbing the kid.
Yeah, I mean, of course the kid's going to cry. It's sensory overload. Kids cry for far less.
But at least show the full story. I mean, again, that's where it's disingenuous. It's not a negative story on the president or on Congress, regardless. Okay, the issue for me is, as it was for you, is, okay, there's plenty of meat here. Do you really have to? Because that's where it feeds into the whole. I mean, that just feeds into the president and his allies, or rather, the president and his diehard followers in the country, of the fake news thing. No, that video wasn't fake, but you see, the phrase may be off, but the song remains the same. Yeah. As far as the spirit of it goes, they're going, well, okay, really, you've got to manipulate the issue to make your point. Well, how confident are you that you're right then?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. However,
it's self-inflicted wound for the media.
Yeah, you can't change the narrative for something that's happening as is. I'm articulating that poorly, but you know, it's, that becomes a little disingenuous. And I'm not at all being an apologist or changing my stance on this. I think it's like you had said before in precast, the fourth estate really doesn't need to. They have the opportunity to take the moral high ground here, and you can't take the moral high ground if you're being disingenuous, or you can't claim the moral high ground.
Exactly. And we don't pretend to be a news organization. Number one, as we've said before, we don't have the resources or the personnel. But second, that's not what we are. We're current events like with this. We look at macro trends, what's going on, and we address it. But the fourth estate, I'm reluctant to name specific publication names. We've only done that on a very rare basis when something's just extremely outrageous. In this case, I would love to name some publication names. It would take too much time.
Yeah.
Okay. Perspective of, okay, again, there are some legitimate issues with, yes, the Speaker of the House, the President of the United States, okay? But don't report this issue, for instance, while we're on immigration, as we addressed in the second podcast that we've done on this issue, in this trio of immigration issues, the one you and I did together, the first one we did together, don't not report that Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has a pretty, I'm not going to say the lion's share, but a pretty large burden of responsibility here, in that when the president offered to do a comprehensive overhaul working with the Democrats, all of a sudden, that's not good enough. We got to address Dreamers alone. It's like, what? Since when?
Yeah, and that, again, that kind of comes down...
Get credit for it?
Yeah, it sort of comes down to what politics is, what democracy is, and that is compromise. And
playing politics at the expense of the American people. I don't care what your party is. This is a pan-partisan issue for me. It's enough already.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you completely.
If this was 2019, Nate, seriously, do you think that the mainstream media would even be thinking about it if it was an off-election year?
Well, and that's something
it makes you wonder, does it not?
Well, it does. I mean, it's funny what comes up during election years and what does not. What is sort of a non-starter? I don't know. I like to think there's a handful of people out there that would run with this and shed it to light, but I don't know in this push to take the House and the Senate again.
It's almost like they wanted Trump to cause a nuclear war, the president to cause a nuclear war with North Korea, but then when he, as bizarre as it came about, over-delivered in their eyes, you don't see North Korea in the talking points anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like disappointed that a nuclear holocaust didn't happen.
Yeah, I would certainly hope that that's not the case.
I know I'm being hyperbolic here, but does it not start to feel that way?
I mean, it can. Yeah. I mean, when you use that, it can definitely seem that way. And
so now you got to talk about this, and you can't just talk about it prima facie, you know, on its face, what's going on. You got to use old pictures, half clips, and not tell them the whole story about the president has tried to take action on this before. Granted, not this specific issue. He's tried to address immigration in its totality, and I'm not saying that means he would have gotten it right. That's not the point. This is not an endorsement of the president's agenda. The point is, it's very disingenuous, very duplicitous of the media to act like, well, see, he's just not willing to do anything. Well, it's not true.
Yeah, he has. And this is where, again, you start shoving border walls into bills and stuff like that. And of course he's going to ask for that.
Yes. I mean, that's why I said this is not an endorsement of all of his ideas. But that's where I was coming from. And you agree, we've discussed this, that there's plenty of legitimate issues here going on to address. You and I don't agree exactly on the means, as is often the case. But as is nearly always the case, you and I agree on the ends, that something needs to be done here.
Yeah.
Okay. But to pretend it was the same lie. In fact, folks, this was broadcast live, this conversation about the budget, when he told the Republicans, no, you don't have 6 months. You've got 90 days. Okay. This was the same series of meetings. I believe it was closed doors at this point, but the same account came out of all the mouths in the room. So I guess they're all lying together.
Yeah.
That there was an offer made, hey, no, let's get do sweeping immigration reform. And the reason I believe the president's version of events, not only because it matches up with everyone else in the room, but because it took the Republicans so off guard. Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell were completely surprised by such an offer. And apparently Chuck Schumer was so surprised by it that he, you know, had, I mean, and talking about pulling it something out of your ass, going, oh, wait, no, we're not going to do sweeping reform. Now DACA, the Dreamers are a separate issue. It's like, come on, Chuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit messy. So anyway, I think we probably beat this to a dead horse, if you will. Let's move on to...
On to the Alpo factory with you.
Yeah.
Alpos or Elmers?
Is it Elmers?
Yeah, they got horse hooves apparently were used for glue back in the day.
They were, yeah.
And the racehorses that didn't win for a long time, yeah, that meat your dog loves, well...
Delicious. I heard horses are good. I've never tried it, but I would.
I have not.
I would, though. All right, let's move on to weed. We have, bro.
Dave's not here, man.
We have talked a bit about weed, and I am hopeful, I guess, in a way, for many reasons, that this precedent that's set in Canada, again, moves forward and there aren't major issues with it and maybe can be some sort of a model for the United States moving forward. But I think part of this is to discuss, again, some of the barriers for pot legalization in the United States. But before we get into that, let's talk about what is going on in Canada. So what we do know is that Canada has become the second country in history, and Uruguay was the first country to actually do this.
And, folks, and to win the World Cup.
What's that?
Uruguay won the first World Cup.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Two, didn't they? Or the first two out of three?
Huh.
Anyway, first in the World Cup, first to legalize that daggum marijuana pill.
The devil's lettuce, as they like to call it.
I don't recall.
All right, so what we know is they did pass a legislation measure, and Trudeau says that it will be announced and regulated sales be up and running by October 17th. And this, because some of the things I've pulled from, obviously, in Colorado, this is a kind of a major topic because Colorado is a fairly independent state and has been doing this for quite a while. And it's hard not to see the analogies, or not rather the analogies, but the similarities and parallels to the state of Colorado to Canada. but here's what it's going to look like. The first kind of bit of this is, unlike the United States, where we legalize medical and recreational cannabis and they're in direct conflict with federal law, Canada's federal government is working to end the prohibition. And they're have.
Treating alcohol now, correct?
What's that?
They're just, Canada's pretty much treating it the same way they treat alcohol, right?
Yeah, fairly much like that. There's a few caveats to that as well. The first interesting thing is that you can order it online, which you can actually do in some cases with alcohol here. And they'll be able to order cannabis online in Canada. But apparently you can already buy medical grade pot online. And it sounds like you'll have to show proof of age in order to receive the products. And this is something we had talked about precast. How do you go about this? But it sounds like the law requires that the ordering party is present for delivery and has to show an ID. And the next part of this is you don't have to be 21. Now, I think the drinking age in Canada, if I remember correctly, is 19. We used to go across the border in Windsor from Detroit and go drink at 19. So I know, how dare
for
we?
For shame.
So
you know, I say it again, if you're old enough to be drafted legally, not that it's going on, but you could be. If you're old enough to step on an IED for your country, you're old enough to drink and smoke pot.
I agree with you completely. So the Canadian federal government has a minimum age at pot use at 18, sort of like what you just said with the whole drafting issue. But it sounds like that it's allowing some of the provinces to alter the age limit. And it sounds like many of them are going to add, I think, at 1 year, so you'll have to be 19, which would kind of coincide with the alcohol laws there. So this is another... Here's another interesting tidbit. So it sounds like there will be no edibles. So I guess there will be...
Exact opposite of Louisiana's medical law to kick in this fall. They got everything but something you can smoke.
Oh, for real? That's
sports hockey.
Interesting. So it sounds like the dispensaries will only carry what they call the flower or the bud that you smoke in concentrates, and apparently seeds as well, but no edibles at this time. So I'm sure that's a whole nother market that I think will probably be tapped into at some point. I mean, that's a major market here in Colorado. And I couldn't imagine that they would take that away. I think it's a lot of people's introduction to cannabis, even though it can really be a crazy trip if you take too much of it. Edibles. You know, the whole, everyone's heard the story. I had one brownie and I couldn't feel it, and then I had three. And the next thing you know, you were on your way to Mars.
It's like the chicks getting white girl wasted because they're not watching it. And they got a swollen stomach. And
I was gonna say I've probably been
somebody's getting DNA tested.
Been there myself. Not the DNA test, but the
pregnant.
No, believe it or not. But it sounds like they're going to take a year to figure out the edible regulation. But I'm sure it will go that way. A next major thing in part of this cannabis saga here is because of federal support, the cannabis companies will actually have access to banking and financial services, which is not the case here in the United States. You can actually buy weed here in the United States, or in Colorado rather, with a debit card, because that's a cash transaction technically. So,
yeah.
But the model of the cash-only business is kind of problematic for a lot of these dispensaries because they're literally just stockpiling bills, almost like you would think if you ever watched like Narcos or something like that and saw these rooms full of just cash. I mean, that's the case. In fact, there's an entire market around a lot of ex-military dudes who actually run the sort of
security.
Like... security and asset transportation. So... This is, I think, something that would have to be modeled and would have to happen in the United States if there was a federal...
It's so ridiculous that the banks can't take the money because, yeah, to have the idea... It's like Representative Trey Gowdy, too bad he's going, but even though he stated at the committee that he's opposed to the legalization of marijuana, his point, I believe I sent you the link to it, but he was... Just talking with a federal employee, someone high ranking. It wasn't DHS, but anyway, the person did not even know. I think it was Health and Human Services, but they didn't even know where, for instance, cocaine base and methamphetamine were listed in the schedules. And he said, and he started telling, well, actually, it's two or it's three, respectively. Like you just totally. He said, do you know where marijuana is scheduled? And the guy then said, well, yes, sir, it's Schedule 1. He goes, Schedule 1, meaning that methamphetamine and cocaine base have more potential medical uses than marijuana. He said, now, I'm not for the legalization of marijuana, but come on, this is absurd.
Yeah, and it is. It is. And
so everybody on the planet, well, excuse me, every American... who keeps up with anything except for Jeff Sessions.
Because he don't recall.
But it's like, as much as I'm not a fan of the Canadian Prime Minister, they definitely got a point here. It's like, well, yeah. We got this one right.
Yeah, exactly. The two last things on this list are that a lot of these pot businesses that will be available in Canada will have the ability to enter the stock market, where here anything that has that isn't a supply chain for marijuana really does well with IPOs. But the actual dispensaries of these companies that might have kind of a conglomerate or maybe even monopoly in the market kind of have this issue with entering the public sector because of the Schedule 1 status. So we'll see what happens with that. And then, of course, the last one is quite...
What would you have to do real quick? I mean, if you wanted to invest, you would have to do it locally, like a cash investment, almost like you're loaning a drug dealer money?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, that's... I don't know if there are banks...
Saying, like, you personally, let's say, you know, Sarah decided to start up the Goodlaxon dispensary of illicit narcotics because she couldn't get financed to a bank or whatever... Well, you had $10K you were willing to loan her, and you'd have to have a gentleman's agreement, basically, because you can't have a contract that will be recognized by a court because it's illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, it's definitely problematic. I'm sure there's ways around generating capital to move forward. But it's certainly not just as easy as going to a bank and saying, hey, I want to open a dispensary on Colfax Avenue. And they say, get lost.
It's easy as making sure your representative and senator's heads don't smell like their rectums.
Good
Remove
luck.
That head from their buttocks, then they can fix this issue.
That's indeed. The last portion of this is that some of the dispensaries in Canada will be government owned. And they each province will kind of determine how to regulate this sort of aspect of legalization. But you as much as the Canadian provinces can own and operate their state-run dispensaries, there also will be obviously independent-owned dispensaries as well. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit there as well. So it's
highly localized.
Yeah. So the idea is that the state-owned dispensaries would find their way into kind of the remote communities where there wouldn't be economic viability for someone.
So they're allowing both private ownership and
government ownership. Yes.
Okay.
Because
the state of Alabama for the longest time, I don't know if it's still this way. And I remember this because, well, you and I both have extended family from there, but I remember this. I was looking up why former Senator, current Attorney General Jeff Sessions recalls failings the way he does. And it's because, for one thing, they had sort of a model for this there for the longest time. It may still be this way, but hard liquor is sold through state-run liquor stores there.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just bizarre.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, even when I used to go to Utah, like 15 years ago, getting a beer somewhere.
Far away from Alabama.
That is far away from Alabama. But I'm just saying, in the context of some states just had these kind of draconian, weird rules.
So what was the law there? I'm sorry.
I'd have to think back. But what I do remember is that it just
was. You could get a beer.
It was, well, I mean, you could get a beer at like an Applebee's or a bar or something like that. But even like a Long Island, they wouldn't serve you unless you got food. And finding like a six pack was actually more problematic than anywhere else I'd ever been.
I thought Mississippi's law was strange. Mississippi basically, you can't, I think you can buy it on Sundays now, but I believe you have to wait until noon, and some counties, they will only sell it to you hot on like, or room temperature on Sundays, because the logic is it'll take you some time to cool it down and slow down your rate of drinking or whatever. It sounds funny, but I actually heard that stated by a mayor on the news in Mississippi one time. But the law there actually makes more sense in terms of you can buy any amount of hard liquor or beer that you want to buy at a bar, for instance, as long as they'll keep serving you. But there's no such thing as a bar in Mississippi without food.
Yeah.
You're required, and most of them, you know, they sell cheap fried food, and chicken fingers or whatever. But that makes more sense than,
Yeah, and I mean, again, we weren't going out to bars that exclusively just for partying and stuff like that. So you know, they're just I'm like, well, I don't know why I picked Applebee's for example, but you know, that it was like we want to go see a movie and have a Long Island before the movie, and they said, well, you have to get food with this, and I was like, oh, well, that's. That's not part of the game plan, but anyway, just briefly, kind of wanted to touch. We've sort of touched some of the barriers to this in the United States, but some of the things that we haven't touched on, obviously, are just sentiment, public sentiment in the United States.
Show us on the doll where the Donald touched you.
Gross. Obviously, there is still this. I don't want to say reefer madness. That's still part of the fabric here, but this idea of getting it off Schedule One and sort of getting the public support for this. There's plenty of public support, but there will always be this sort of backlash towards it, and that kind of leads to the next barrier, and that is who is lobbying against the legalization of marijuana, whether that is Big Pharma or private prisons who are
your state sheriffs.
Yep, private prisons that are publicly traded that. You know, their profit is derived from the tenants or clients or whoever you want, whatever you want to call them, inmates in their facilities. So if
clients, tenants,
by virtue, so you know, what's the easiest thing to catch someone for? It's nonviolent drug offenses with a bag of weed.
Right. So, remember, we addressed this in the previous podcast. I'm sure you won't mind me elucidating again that we finally got a legitimate reason for why. Because I'm sure plenty of you have wondered, or I would imagine plenty of you have wondered as we have, okay, so what is the big deal with all of us having known rational cops through the years? Why is the sheriff's lobby? If you look it up, folks, look at your local news. Do it. I Bing, but you go ahead and Google, you heathens. And go ahead and search, and 9 times out of 10, you're going to discover in whatever state, the sheriff's lobby was one of the biggest voices against legalizing marijuana. And I'm going, okay, most people would rather be on a road full of people that have smoked pot than a road full of drunks. Not that either should happen, but...
Yeah, if you had to pick a lesser of the two evils.
Right. So we finally got, in conversation, I got 3 different law enforcement officers. Yes, all 3 of them wanted to remain anonymous because they're not chiefs of police or head of the sheriff's department. They don't want to get fired. But put it to you this way, if I was called before a court of law and required to show who they are, I could do it. And they gave different reasons, but they all gave one reason in common. They were all 3 in different states, Louisiana, Georgia, and Florida. And they each provide, there was one common denominator, and that was kind of like you'll see on Law and Order. Well, we couldn't get him for capital murder, and this is an extreme example, they don't, you know, but we couldn't get him for capital murder, but we did find them trafficking, you know, a half kilogram of cocaine. Well, same concept applies here. It's used as a tool in plea bargain the argument is it saves the state money in prosecution, but in the long run, they're able to get convictions on things, people that otherwise walk because of the marijuana statutes. It's a lesser offense, it's easier to get.
Which is really interesting.
it's still BS, not their answer. Yeah, I mean that with respect to them. It's the system is messing up. Well, y'all need to find another way. But it was interesting to finally hear a coherent reason from authorities on why it's illegal. Because otherwise, you often get, well, because, I mean, I'm against marijuana because, you know, it's against the law. Okay, well, so was women voting at one point.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just support something because it is the law. I mean, but at least, and you and I said this at the time, we'll say it again, at least it is a coherent reason.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Other than it's because.
Yeah, and it is problematic as it is, but, you know, we've touched on that. So, but yeah, that's some of the barriers. We're rolling up in 45 minutes, so I think we'll wrap all that up, and we'll see, probably touch back in October to kind of, well, there'll be a lot going on in October, but we'll see how
Shame, man. I wish I had a gravity bong here now, man.
Yeah, right? Oh, man.
There's a beverage here, man.
Oh, God. So, well, as always, my friend, it is the greatest pleasure and privilege to do this with you. So until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.